Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich, winners of the Brokers Ireland Investment Excellence Award each year since 2014. Now that's reassuring.
Now, the Hamas-run health ministry has said today there have been seven more malnutrition deaths in Gaza. The total death toll from a lack of food since October 2023 is now 154. 89 of them were children. Yesterday, it was reported by the health ministry that the total number of Palestinians killed since the war began on October 7th, 2023, has now surpassed 60,000. My next guest is an emergency room physician in Dallas who's just returned to the United States after a stint as a volunteer doctor in the Nasser Hospital in Gaza, where he treated seriously ill and malnourished children, along with mass casualties from bombings. Dr. Adil Hussein, welcome to Drive Time.
Hi, John. How are you? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You say that you will spend the rest of your life, I've been reading, thinking about the patients, haunted by them maybe, the people you couldn't save.
Yeah. So I spent 2 weeks in Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in Gaza. And we lived in the hospital for 2 weeks because everything outside was a red zone, meaning fair game for bombing. And I think about these patients because nearly every single morning we were met with a mass casualty incident. So we had hundreds and hundreds of traumas within a few hours every morning. Shortly after the food aid distribution sites opened. And we saw as many lives that we tried to save and as many as that we did, there was a lot of death. And obviously, as you can only imagine. And yeah, the certain cases that stuck with me are often the pediatric cases. I mean, I'll give a very quick example just of one. I remember there was like a 9-year-old boy who came in during the mass casualty. There's bodies everywhere, bodies on the floor, bodies on stretcher, multiple bodies on stretchers. And there was a 9-year-old boy shot in the head, shot in the neck, shot in the abdomen. And he's alive. He's having agonal breathing. I check on ultrasound. I see that he's having internal bleeding. And I have to make that decision right then and there within seconds to see if am I going to try to resuscitate and save this kid or am I going to just move on to the next body. And I remember making that decision to push ketamine, which is a pain sedation medication, through his IV to just give him a peaceful death, knowing that his injuries are so far too severe for survival during this mass casualty. And it was just unreal for me to make that decision. Like, never have I ever had to make that. But it's a common theme in Gaza.
And I can see that you would never forget a situation and that person, that child,
yeah,
in that situation. Yeah. And I'll ask you more about those patients in a moment. I mentioned to our listeners you're an emergency room doctor in Dallas, but part of a group calling yourselves the Gaza Six. How did this all come about?
Yeah, that's been our nickname. We still talk every single day, so... us six, we all met in Amman, Jordan. We went through Rahma Worldwide. That's an organization that got us through. It's a humanitarian aid organization for doctors. And we had no idea who we were. We didn't know anyone. We all just met in Jordan. And we were the six that were approved. Believe it or not, John, 21 of us applied for this two-week trip. And only six of us got approved. This is through the IDF security clearances. They do background checks and they decide who enters and who exits, who enters and who gets denied. So thankfully, us six, four of us were from the U.S., one from Algeria, one from Jordan. We all met in Jordan and just called ourselves the Gaza Six because we were the only ones who got approved.
So. Okay, so in this situation, there were 21 medics willing to go, but only six of you getting through in this particular period.
Yeah.
And before, that's a big decision to leave your job, to leave your family. Before you entered Gaza, you made some final phone calls, I heard, just in case.
Yeah. That drive from Amman, Jordan down to Gaza and Khan Yunis was probably one of the most surreal moments of my life. I have a six-month-old baby at home, so making this decision to even go was a big decision because not only were we just going to a third-world country, we were going to a war zone. I even made my living will right before I left just in case. I made my last, I lit a little video for my daughter just in case that were to happen. So it was very surreal, very difficult situation. When we were at the border on the Israeli border with Jordan, getting interrogated, we got a notification from IDF and our coordinator saying that almost effective immediately, almost all of Khan Yunis is under red zone, full evacuation notice, meaning fair game for bombing. So that moment was very surreal. As we were driving through Gaza, getting closer and closer to Gaza, we could hear the bombs in the distance. We're in our one caravan and we just hear poof on the right, poof on the left. And the bombs are just, and the gunfire is just getting stronger. So that's when we started making our last phone calls to my wife. Everyone started making phone calls to their families, just in case. So it was, your life kind of flashes before your eyes at that moment.
I can't imagine what you're feeling then when you actually get to the Nasser Hospital in Gaza. Relief, I'm assuming, but then quickly you must be overwhelmed by what you see. And well, tell me, what was your reaction at that stage? Because you knew you were there to help, and at least you'd made it that far.
Yeah. Obviously, it was definitely a relief to be there, but you realize you're in the heart of it now. Because constantly, every half an hour to an hour, you hear missiles dropping in the distance. Some are close, some are far. You hear gunfire throughout the day. They're shaking the building. They're shaking the windows. The locals don't react. I realized the first day or two, we were getting scared because it was our first time. But the locals are used to it. It's part of their daily life. We got there very late at night. So we started the next morning, and I was ready to work 12-hour shifts. I told them, like, hey, this is what I do in the U.S. And they kindly laughed, actually, because they were saying that you're not going to survive just 4 hours. And they were totally right. They said you can do 4-hour bursts and then you need to take a rest.
So we know doctors are used to long hours here, and where you work in America, you were there with one intention in mind, to do as much as you could, but you're saying it's simply not possible in those conditions.
Yeah. And I quickly realized that, because it's just absolutely draining.
So give us an insight into those 4-hour shifts then, and how they were for you.
Yeah. So I said, every morning we anticipated a mass casualty, because there would be mass shootings and bombings at the food aid distribution sites. And I lived it. It's no matter like what people say, these are horrific injuries happening every single morning. They are innocently shooting and killing boys, young boys. Most of the people who go out to the food aid distribution sites have to travel hours to even get there. And then it's also in a military zone, and they are innocently shooting these children. I had a 20-year-old boy that was in my arms, bleeding from the head. And I spoke to his brother, who was sitting there with him at the food aid distribution site. He said, we were just sitting there waiting patiently, not even moving. Because they say that, oh, they don't want you to get close to the food and then they'll shoot. But he said they were just sitting there waiting and mindlessly shot through the head. His brain function is minimal. I had a 26-year-old male shot through and through the chest into his thoracic spine. Paraplegic, paralyzed. He cannot walk forever. I had a 9-year-old boy shot through the face, through the right mandible, through the jaw, and the bullet was embedded in his C6 cervical spine. He cannot move his arms and legs. And it's just appalling, John. Like, we talked about the deaths. So yes, 50 were killed that day. 60 were killed that day. But we don't talk about the hundreds of thousands of lives that are changed forever. My heart goes out to these kids, to these families who will be paralyzed and discharged to a tent. They're just going to be sitting in a tent and rotting there for who knows how long and can't move. And that's something that no one should ever endure. No, even the worst of mankind should not even endure that, let alone children who have the whole rest of their lives ahead of them.
Were people able to tell you where they had been, or sometimes is it just apparent that they were looking for food? Because we've seen the images of people carrying vessels of any kind they can to try to get food at great danger in some situations, to have to almost fight for their place in line or in the queues as well, and to go home disappointed too.
No, nearly every one of these patients are coming from the food aid distribution sites, the GHF. And some have severe injuries, shot through the head where they can't speak to me. But some are living. Some are just shot through the chest, or some are shot through the arm. And they are telling me firsthand where they were, where they're coming from. And yes, it's chaos at the food aid distribution sites, just because there's such little quantity for the amount of people that are starving. Right. I was told initially there was only about 1,500 boxes of GHF boxes of food aid for thousands and thousands and thousands of Palestinians that are coming there. The population is 2 million. Like, what do they expect? Obviously, people are going to want to do anything to get that food for their family. So it's yeah, it's a terrible situation. It's a poorly organized situation, and it's affecting not only children but also adults. I've had so many adults even come into my ER skin and bones where I would have to pronounce them dead. I even had a couple of children that were malnourished, and we can even talk about that
Was
in a moment.
I'll ask you about that in just a moment. I'm wondering, was food getting to the hospital?
So we had limited food. We relied on donations that people could bring for the doctors at least. So the doc there was a bunch of international doctors from all over the world. There was probably like 15 to 20 doctors at my time. And we would eat maybe bread and beans once or twice a day, and that's all they could bring. Sometimes they would get a cucumber or eggplant and they would mix that in, but we were living off of that. I lost 13 pounds myself. My colleagues lost 15 pounds in 2 weeks, and that's nothing even compared to the Palestinian people who are losing 20, 25 pounds. And you see it. Everyone is skin and bones. Everyone is malnourished to a degree. So it is, the scarcity is real.
I'm wondering how people can keep going. I see why there are so many reasons they can't maybe be on those 4-hour stints you spoke of.
That's why it's actually even getting worse as you're talking about it. We're getting more malnutrition deaths, and not only in the children, but also the healthcare workers and the adults. I'm still in contact with the ER nurses, the doctors there, the staffing. I've had already two or three people reach out to me saying that they fainted at work. They had to be placed on an IV because they're just so malnourished, yet they're still working so hard.
Some of the images I referred to there of what we've seen, Dr. Hussein, specifically, was in a Sky News report I was watching where you were treating a 3-year-old called Hassan while you were in the Nasser hospital. Will you tell us about Hassan?
Yeah, Hassan, we all called him Baby Hassan, but he was not a baby. He was a 3-year-old child, and he was the size of a baby. He was only 6 kg. Hassan suffered from severe malnutrition, a form called marasmus, where he was literally skin and bones. And in the report, and also in the videos and pictures that I have, his arms and legs are skin and bones. There's no fat. There's not even muscle, because the muscle is being broken down as a last resort for energy. He can't move his arms. He can't move his legs. He can't even cry. He doesn't have enough energy to cry. He needs a special type of nutrition and formula that is sitting at the border, just a few miles or kilometers away, that's being blocked. That has been being blocked by Israel. And itself, what we realize, this is just intentional, deliberate starvation of a people, right? Like, who deliberately stops formula from coming in? My group was able to get formula in through the border. They somehow did not inspect our bags, but the group that came in right after us, they inspected each bag and threw out the baby formula, the medications, and medical supplies in the trash, saying that this is excess. So they know what they're doing. They're purposely starving the people. But for Hassan,
This is what the United Nations would have called out yesterday. In recent days, Israeli authorities would reject it. It's what you've seen, though, Dr. Hussein. What happened to Hassan? He was 6 kilograms at 3 years of age. He should have been more than twice that, I think.
So he has 6 kg. He should have been about 15 kg. So he was less than half his weight. And his mother is malnourished, so she can't provide any breast milk. And he suffered from marasmus. And because he was not getting enough nutrition, his body was breaking down. It was breaking down the muscle. And now, since the muscle was gone, his body went into a severe metabolic acidotic state, meaning it just kind of broke down on itself. He passed away, unfortunately, 2 days after, 2 days later, after I saw him in the hospital. And he suffered from things called like toxic megacolon, the metabolic acidosis. His body was just breaking down any form of energy to the point where there was nothing left, and he passed away. It was horrific to see, horrific to console the mother, and just unnatural in 2025, when we have so many resources, we have so much food, we have abundance everywhere in the world, ease of getting it, transportation. This should not be happening.
Hassan, one of many that will stay with you, the people who could couldn't be saved, should have been saved. Well done for those you did help to save. And thank you very much for speaking to me on Drive Time this evening. Dr. Adil Hussain, an American doctor there in Dallas, after his recent trip to the Nasser Hospital in Gaza. Back shortly.